John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, September 13, 2012. Israeli government is seeking approval of illegal settlements in the West Bank. Meanwhile, an Egyptian aid convoy enters the Gaza Strip. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. The right-wing-led Israeli government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been seeking the approval of the Israeli Supreme Court in order to expand more than 40 settlements built on privately owned Palestinian lands in the West Bank. The government is also seeking the legalization of all existing constructions that were conducted on lands that Israel illegally annexed from the Palestinians under military and security considerations. Israeli newspaper Haaretz said the response the government provided to the Supreme Court regarding the outposts indicates that the government is leaning towards giving legitimacy to these illegal constructions. The response came after the Supreme Court received an appeal on the issue filed by the Israeli human rights organization Yesh Din. Yesh Din is demanding the government to implement the Supreme Court ruling that calls for demolishing all illegal structures built by settlers around Beit Il settlement near the central West Bank city of Ramallah. Haaretz said that the Israeli government officially recognizes the fact that approximately 40 settlements built in the occupied territories were partially, and in many cases completely, built on private Palestinian lands. In other news, the Palestinian Minister of Health in Gaza stated Thursday that a convoy headed by Secretary General of the Humanitarian Relief Committee, Dr. Khaled Abdelaziz, managed to enter the Gaza Strip to deliver urgently needed medical supplies. Convoy members were welcomed by health ministry officials, public relations officials, and journalists. They carried several sorts of urgently needed medications in addition to solutions used in kidney dialysis, anesthetic medications, antibiotics, and several other medications and equipment used to help cancer patients. Abdelaziz said the convoy members are delighted to be in Gaza and Palestine and called for more support to the Palestinian people and their just cause and struggle against the illegal Israeli military occupation. The Gaza Strip has been suffering frequent closures and military invasions, especially after the Israeli unilateral withdrawal from the coastal region. On Wednesday night, Israeli military vehicles rolled into the besieged area and opened random fire. Eyewitnesses said that two armored military bulldozers and two tanks invaded Al-Maghazi refugee camp and bulldozed some nearby areas and uprooted some trees. No clashes were reported. That's all from Palestine today. This was the Thursday, September 13th, roundup news from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassif and me, Jawad Rishmawi.
Sound of fighting outside the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, on September 11, 2012. On September 11th, the U.S. ambassador to Libya and three other Americans were killed during a protest followed by a battle at the U.S. consulate in Libya. First, there was a basically peaceful protest near the consulate against a hate-filled, anti-Islamic amateur film posted to YouTube by someone in the U.S. Late in the day, a convoy of armed men arrived and entered the protest. These men opened fire on the consulate with a variety of weapons, then stormed the building and set it on fire. By the time U.S. and Libyan government forces were able to recapture the building, the U.S. ambassador was nowhere to be found. He later turned up at a hospital, dead. Three other Americans were also killed. The ambassador and his staffers died of smoke inhalation, according to one unconfirmed report. Another says their car was hit by a rocket while they were trying to escape. Here's what one of the protesters had to say, taken from a video by the UK-based Guardian News.
Today, the people are very angry because of the Prophet Muhammad. Today, you know, everybody think that Americans want to put the situation in a very bad situation. The Libyans don't like to say something bad about their Prophet. Prophet Muhammad, la ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah, he is not Osama bin Laden. He is not anybody else. He is our Prophet. He is the best people, the human in the world. So we have to have opportunity just to stop this film. Stopping the film is our hope, is our relationship with the Americans. Americans want to say something bad about Prophet Muhammad. Prophet Muhammad, la ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah, I am speaking in English now to them. So don't make our people angry, because they will kill, they will fight, they will do such a situation. This is the situation because of the Americans channels. They want to say something bad about our Prophet.
Somehow, I have a suspicion that this was about more than just the offensive, hate-filled amateur film the protest was supposed to be about. The civil war in Libya was long and bitter, and I wonder if the real reason for the intensity of the attack on the U.S. consulate was fallout from that. The Libyan government suspects former Gaddafi operatives. The U.S. claims Al-Qaeda was retaliating for the recent death of one of their leaders to a U.S. drone strike. Cairo, Egypt, September 11, 2012. Protesters stormed a U.S. embassy but harmed nobody, even after warning shots were fired by security forces. Instead of setting fires and shooting rockets, they scaled the walls, tore down the U.S. flag and burned it, and raised a black Islamic flag in its place. Remember, in Egypt, unlike Libya, the U.S. and NATO were not combatants in a long, drawn-out civil war. Mr. Barack Obama, you will be hearing from many people calling these attacks a second September 11th. This time, however, four people were killed, not 3,000. Even though U.S. embassies are considered U.S. soil, this can't possibly be considered equivalent to a major attack inside two U.S. cities like in 2001. It's no reason to go to war and kill thousands more. In fact, now's the time to pull the plug on war in the Middle East. A recent survey shows two-thirds of the U.S. population saying the war in Iraq was not worth it. By withdrawing from the Middle East and Afghanistan, you can save the lives of U.S. troops and get ahead of Mitt Romney.
Strength in their hearts and fear in their eyes. Old soldiers never die, they only fade away. But the young ones do not die, no, they are cut down instead. And someone pulled the trigger, gave the order, held the song. And someone wrote the advert in the paper that they read, I will be done. But you won't get your hands on my son. You can't wait till kingdom come.
Former military criminal investigator Myla Hayter ran into constant roadblocks while pursuing rape cases in the military. Many local commanders did not take claims of sexual abuse seriously. Despite repeated attempts to press charges against sexual abusers, only 8% of known sexual assaults in the military are prosecuted, far below the level of prosecution in civil courts. According to the Christian Science Monitor, little seems to have changed since the 1991 Tailhook affair, where hundreds of soldiers at a Las Vegas convention groped and assaulted female soldiers. In April, Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta pledged to prosecute more sexual offenders. The Pentagon later set up a new special victims unit to investigate cases of sexual assault. A 2012 scandal at the Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, where nearly 50 female trainees were victimized, revealed the difficulties in prosecuting sexual predators. Thus far, only 6 instructors have been charged with adultery and rape. Documentary filmmaker Kirby Fox, who has interviewed dozens of rape victims in the military, says women are victimized a second time when the Pentagon fails to act against perpetrators of sexual assault. Fox says that the Pentagon should, quote, educate and teach values of respect for women.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. The Democratic National Convention took place in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hackers obtained Mitt Romney's tax returns and sent flash drives to both Democratic and Republican Party offices in Tennessee, setting up a competitive bidding auction. Rather, the Democrats or the Republicans post a higher bid determines which party gets the tax returns that Mitt Romney has been refusing to release. If the Democrats post a higher bid, they get to release the whole thing. If the Republicans post a higher bid, they get to continue to hush up Mitt Romney's tax returns. Secret Service is investigating, but if they're up against somebody like Anonymous, they're a toast. Then again, Anonymous wouldn't allow the GOP to pay hush money. Anonymous would post these tax returns, and that would be the end of it.
Coming down now, but the legal understand. Go!
an additional development, Larry Flint of Hustler magazine has posted a $1 million reward to anybody who can obtain Mitt Romney's tax returns legally so they can be published in Hustler magazine. That's right, a $1 million bounty on any legally obtained copies of Mitt Romney's tax returns. Of September, anti-globalization and Occupy activists disrupted the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, trade globalization talks. The highly secretive negotiations were being conducted at the Lansdowne Resort in Virginia. Some activists blocked delegates from entering the meeting. Others sent up weather balloons holding a 75-foot banner reading, "Free trade my ass, flush the TPP." One activist was suspended in a climbing harness, 20 feet in the air in a blockading position. The cops threatened to both apply a taser to the metal poles and a fire pepper spray at her. The taser would not have worked so long as she did not touch the poles, and tasers combined with pepper spray are a notorious fire hazard. With the road blocked, and with the use of force also blocked, the cops had no choice but to negotiate to let Miss Margaret Flowers descend in peace without being arrested in order to get the road reopened. Meanwhile, three Occupy DC activists managed to covertly enter and disrupt the negotiations themselves. Here's what things sounded like as they shouted down the so-called free trade talks.
Mic check!
Partnership.
It's a tool of the 1%.
It's a tool of the 1%.
The 99% rejects it.
This closed door secret deal.
Will kill local communities. Raise prices on life-saving medicines. In the United States and all party countries. Give Wall Street banks even more unlimited power. Give corrupt corporations. Even more power. To trample through the environment of all countries.
Anti-globalization movement was dead for years, but just after delegates to the Trans-Pacific Partnership talks about that, first they had to run a gauntlet just to get in, then they got hammered by a good old-fashioned Occupy shout-down mic check. Hats off to Lacey McAlay for leading a charge against the TPP. On the 6th of September, the D.C. Zoning Board held a hearing on the proposed luxury hotel in Adams Morgan. This hotel would displace every low-income apartment resident on the block of Champlain Street just south of Euclid Street. An estimated 150 people showed up at the hearing to oppose allowing the hotel to be built, while the developer submitted such inadequate drawings that they were compared to cartoons, and the hearing had to be delayed. Here's an interview with a D.C. resident who was present at the hearing.
What happened today at the zoning hearing? Well, at the Zoning Commission today to address the Adams Morgan proposed hotel project. Basically, the Zoning Commission actually told the developer that the plans they had submitted were too shoddy, too loose. He was like, what are these black and white kind of images that you submit? He called them cartoons.
Ooh.
And he basically said that they needed to resubmit. They needed to resubmit the actual drawings. They postponed for another week. And it seems like the developers actually will scramble to get the...
It'll cost them money, if nothing else.
The drawings redone.
That's going to cost money. The reason they did shoddy drawings was probably to save money.
Probably.
How many people were at the hearing?
I mean, there must have been 100, 150 people in the room.
Damn.
Yeah. Also, one of the funny things that happened was a council member, Jim Graham, our very, you know, our clown-like kind of buffoonish council member from Ward 1, who actually granted the hotel project a $46 million tax abatement.
Ooh.
Should it be built. That council member stood up and basically tried to address the crowd, and one of the people in the Zoning Commission, I can't recall his name right now, actually said, sorry, council member, we don't have time for you right now.
Ooh.
And Jim Graham, council member Jim Graham, is probably coming back next week.
Yeah, it sounds like the Graham cracker got crunched today.
Councilmember Jim Graham definitely got crunched up to a little s'mores.
My shadow's all in one that walks beside me. My shallow heart's the only thing it lets beat in. Sometimes I wish someone up there will find me. Till then I walk alone.
On the 9th of September, WPFW, the DC Mic Check, which is Occupy DC's newspaper, and several other groups held a forum for DC City Council members at Busboys and Poets. One of the questions that came up rather quickly was Walmart and who took any corporate funding from Walmart.
I want to know, how much money did you take or refuse to take from Walmart, which, as you know, is trying to invade this city? How much money from Walmart in your campaign, in dollars?
First up, Muriel Bowser, Ward 4.
I'm not aware of any contributions from Walmart.
Oh!
Well, that's a half-truth. It's true that the Muriel Bowser for Ward 4 2008 campaign finance reports don't show any contributions from Walmart Stores Incorporated. However, they do show a $1,000 contribution from Walmart's intended landlord in Ward 4, Folger Pratt. In addition, Muriel Bowser for Ward 4 2008 received another $500 from David Wilmot, who is Walmart's lobbyist in D.C., and not only that, David Wilmot was Muriel Bowser's campaign finance chairperson for Muriel Bowser for Ward 4 2008, which was her re-election campaign committee.
I'm not aware of any contributions from Walmart.
Next up, Jack Evans. He too denied taking any campaign cash from Walmart. Again, the question is, does that only mean Walmart Stores Incorporated, or does that also mean all of Walmart's CEOs, employees, lobbyists, the whole ball of wax? In all probability, Jack Evans interpreted my question in the most restrictive possible manner as meaning, quote, did I take any registered campaign contributions from Walmart Stores Incorporated?
I have no contributions from Walmart.
Yvette Alexander hadn't arrived yet when I asked the question about did you take any money from Walmart in your last campaign? But she admitted that she was trying to sell Walmart to her constituents in a roundabout manner.
Quite frankly, not a whole lot of other retailers do I go around selling. Now, there are a few, like Costco and Wegmans, and Harris Teeter that we're going to sell pretty hard when we get a chance to get them to come to the war.
I can speak to two developments that we have actually lobbied for several big box retailers to come to Ward 7, Shoppers Food Warehouse, Wegmans, Target. All of them were not interested. So we're dealing with two developers in Ward 7 that Walmart will be the tenant to that. I can guarantee you there are community benefits agreements with those developers. It's A&R Development on East Capitol Street and Rappaport Development in Skyland. So they will be tenants. Walmart is not asking the city for any money. They're going to be tenants to those developers, and there are comprehensive community benefits agreements there. Walmart has been a good community partner thus far in terms of what they have invested in Ward 7.
Ms. Yvette Alexander, do you mean that Walmart has invested in Ward 7 the way Walmart invested in Mexico, with massive bribes to politicians to bulldoze over community opposition and get their stores open where they're not wanted? I don't think we want that kind of investment in D.C. Again, Ms. Alexander was late. She missed the first question of the forum, which was, should corporate campaign cash be allowed in D.C. politics? Now, Ms. Muriel Bowser, who took the maximum allowed by law both from Folger Pratt and from David Wilmot, Walmart's lobbyist in D.C., needless to say, she answered yes, as did several other council members who support Walmart.
My first question requires a basic yes or no answer. You can give a one-minute explanation after that. Should corporations be allowed to donate money to political candidates in D.C.? Yes or no, please. And a one-minute explanation after that.
Anybody?
Well, I'll start. In my position about contributions to political campaigns.
Yes or no?
Yes. And here's why. It has been my position, and it's been clear throughout, that corporations have been able to give in the District of Columbia, and that we have pretty limits that are pretty strict. $500 in the case of a ward member, I think $1,500 in the case of a chairman's race, and $2,000 in case of
and
the mayor's race.
You took that $500 from Folger Pratt, you took $1,000 from David Wilmot, Walmart's lobbyist in D.C., and as your campaign finance chairperson for Muriel Bowser for Ward 4 2008, he helped raise another $6,200 for your campaign. And how much more money did he bundle into your campaign? You're damn right corporate cash is getting into D.C. politics, and you're part of the problem. Just like in Mexico, all that campaign cash, legal or otherwise, helps clear the way for big corporations like Walmart. Here's what someone at the forum had to say about Walmart and why Walmart should not be allowed to come to D.C.
It didn't provide money to any of you, but we have six Walmarts coming to a 68-square-mile city. You weren't here for that question.
Okay.
Everyone else said they were not aware of receiving any money from Walmart. Unfortunately, Walmart's record is not that of a good corporate citizen. It's owned by some of the wealthiest people in the world, yet it pays its workers so little that they're often forced under welfare rolls. It would take money out of the city, and it has a long history of being accused of racist and sexist hiring practices.
Same D.C. Council Forum on the 9th of September at Busboys and Poets, where several council members were tripped up by the question of Walmart, someone from Occupy Our Homes D.C. brought up the issue of foreclosures and evictions in D.C.
Right now, a retired D.C. EMT is facing eviction because J.P. Morgan Chase and Freddie Mac refused to let her pay a lower payment and modify her mortgage. The same thing is happening to Reverend Michael Van Zandt of Faith Temple Church. And I just want to know what the council is doing to stop foreclosures in D.C. and to force banks to the table to negotiate, since we bailed them out and saved them, and now they are turning down helping our residents. And in terms of eviction, evictions. D.C. is one of the only areas that has chattel eviction, which means the banks are able to throw all of people's personal properties onto the street instead of paying for storage to give people a month or two to be able to take care of their belongings. So how are you looking out for your citizens instead of like being chummy with the banks?
After much boasting by many council members about having passed legislation putting severe restrictions on foreclosures and evictions in D.C., D.C. Councilmember Tommy Wells literally invited Deborah Harris and Reverend Van Zandt into his office to take care of that.
Yeah, I'm going to be quick on that because the answer has been given. The question was, what has the council done about it or doing about it? And the answer is we passed legislation to deal specifically with the issue you raised. And so the individuals or people you're talking about need to contact the appropriate council members and or my office if you want to, and we'll take care of that.
We'll take care of that. Well, Mr. Tommy Wells, we're going to hold you to that. This had sure better work out better than that famous promise made by former Mayor Fenty to residents of Franklin Shelter. In 2007, he vowed to keep a roof over the heads of Franklin Shelter residents, saying, quote, "If you're not happy, I'm not happy." The next year, he closed the shelter and threw the residents and all their belongings out in the rain. 3 years after that, Occupy DC staged the third occupation of Franklin School, but the building remains abandoned. Mr. Tommy Wells, that would be a terrible example to emulate. Already there is a problem. Shortly before you spoke at Busboys and Poets, Occupy Our Homes D.C. symbolically foreclosed on a Bank of America branch, forcing them to close and forcing them to agree to meet with Reverend Michael Van Zandt. On the 10th of September, Bank of America's reply came out. Nothing but an offer of money for the good Reverend to abandon his home to the bank. That is not acceptable, and if Bank of America wants to do business in D.C., they have to answer to people like you, Mr. Tommy Wells.
He was a mayor and he's still a rat. Evicting us all, condos and baseball. YouTube he marries at Freddie Mac. Freddie the Mac, Freddie the Mac. Evicting the people who bailed him out. What would you expect with Tony on board? Evicted a set, he's evicting us now. Tony the Rat, Freddie the Mac. Stop the evictions and put down the knife. You come to our homes, we're coming to yours. The wheel is probably seeing you soon.
Section 5 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act is a key tool for the expansion of voting rights, and the law played an important role in blocking recent state voter suppression legislation, such as restrictive photo ID laws and reduced hours for early voting. In Texas, the powers in Section 5 were employed to overturn congressional redistricting maps when they were judged to be discriminatory against African Americans and Latinos. But new legal challenges to the Voting Rights Act before the Supreme Court may undercut the anti-discrimination law. Currently, Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act applies to Texas, South Carolina, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. It also covers selected areas of Florida, New York, and California. The original Voting Rights Act gave the U.S. Justice Department powers to challenge voter literacy tests in areas where less than 50% of eligible voters are registered. In 1975, the Act's powers were expanded to enable challenges to election materials printed only in English in districts where a significant minority does not speak English. A recent majority opinion by Chief Justice John Roberts opened the door to new legal challenges to key sections of the Voting Rights Act. Legal petitions backed by the Conservative Project on Fair Representation claim that the Voting Rights Act is being used to create new gerrymandered districts favoring racial minorities. Now, many legal observers expect the Roberts Court will soon strike down the anti-discrimination enforcement powers in Section 5.
The Democratic and Republican National Conventions are finally over. On the last night of the DNC, protesters marched to the streets of Charlotte, North Carolina, denouncing both parties in the streets outside the convention.
the final night of the Democratic National Convention. We are protesting many of the sponsors of the DNC, such as Duke Energy, which pollutes our country and pollutes our nations. And we are protesting many of the similarities between the Democratic and Republican parties, including money in politics, including the fact that the Obama authorized National Defense Authorization Act, H.R. 347, and many of these other heinous acts. The differences between the Republicans and the Democrats is becoming less and less clear by the day. We're going to be seeing several marches over here with various coalition groups. Later on, there will be a split group that will be having a silent burned promises march. We will be protesting about all the different promises that Barack Obama brought on us, and then we will be burning those promises, and we will be protesting that as well.
We are standing.
We are standing
in the heart of.
In the heart of.
Charlotte.
Charlotte.
The Wall Street of the South.
The Wall Street of the South.
Banks got bailed out.
Banks got bailed out.
We got sold out.
We got sold out.
We're here.
We're here.
To send a message.
To send a message.
To Obama.
To Obama.
And Romney.
And Romney.
That enough is enough.
That enough is enough.
The two-party duopoly must stop.
The two-party duopoly must stop.